Happy Friday. Just a few hours in an afternoon away from your weekend. Good morning, I'm Brady Bowman. Across from me is RCPD Director Brad Schoen. A lot of phone calls. We still got a little bit of time for phone calls, about 9 minutes, a little less than 9 minutes, 785-537-1350. And still a lot to talk about. I mean, we could talk for hours about this issue.
I shouldn't have gave away the first half of my spiel here, should I?
Maybe not. Maybe not. But, you know, I teased a little bit before we went into this last break about how a lot of this is just not just RCPD, but police departments across the country just kind of reacting to the reality of their environment. I think you touched on that a little bit after one of our callers, but when you have, and I do not want to make this a Second Amendment debate or issue. That's not really the direction I want to go with this, but just the reality of the fact that you have a lot of folks with guns out there. And as you mentioned, because people have more of them, we get in those situations where, well, they're there and emotions will rise, whatever.
Sure.
But this isn't Mayberry anymore.
Oh, no, it hadn't been Mayberry since 1983 when I got hired, right. But it, you know, I think the way I phrased it was just, it's a little different now. And it is. These things sort of spread slowly. And as is a lot of times the case, they come to us here in River City, a little later than you might see in other locations, but eventually they get here. And this is true of a lot of cultural phenomena, not just this whole question of guns and militarization of police and all this sort of stuff. But I think generally one of the things we talked about offline was that this is a response. You know, we're not doing this proactively saying, hey, we don't have a problem yet, but we just want to make sure when we do it ready. We're doing this because we've had issues. We've had people under fire. We've had people under fire who didn't have adequate protection or had to wait for adequate protection. And so that's what we're really after. I think maybe it was the first caller talked about ballistic vests. You know, we could buy more vests. Well, everybody's already got a vest. And vests aren't, while nothing's a guarantee, certainly there's a lot of exposed body parts when you're wearing a ballistic vest. Might make sure if the right weapon is fired at you that nothing penetrates the vest to your torso, but what does it do to protect the rest of you? What does it do to protect areas where there is no vest? What does it do to protect you when some sort of a weapon is being used that'll penetrate a vest? And there are those out there, and they're fairly common. So that's why we kind of look at a vehicle like this to be used in special circumstances where we think it might be useful. And, you know, I can think of a couple of other incidents where it would have been useful, but we didn't get one there, and nobody actually shot at the cop or shot the cop. It's just one of those sad states of affairs. You know, on both a personal and professional level, I don't really want to do this. But on both a personal and a professional level, I'm convinced that we need to. And that's kind of what I get paid to do is ignore what I want sometimes and do what is appropriate for the guys, as another caller pointed out, and for the community as well. So that's where we are with it.
Right. And again, not to make it a Second Amendment issue, but just looking at the facts of the case, if people want more accessibility to guns out there, you're going to have more guns. You're going to have more, just because of math, you're going to have more gun incidents and, well, police need more production.
And we talked about that a little at the law board as well, you know, in terms of the Part 1 crimes that we're looking at right now. One of the, don't get me wrong, Part 1 crime overall is down this year, and that's a good thing, and it's fairly low.
And Part 1 means just for folks.
The serious stuff, the murder, rape, robbery, assault, aggravated assault, larcenies, you know, that sort of thing. The Part 1 crime rate is down overall, but it's down because the property crimes are down. More property crimes have fallen off the radar than person crimes, the assaults, for example, have come onto the radar. But when you look at the person crimes only, that's up. And it's up for a couple of reasons, one of which is assaults. And a lot of times when you end up with assaults on a Part 1 UCR assault, rather, what you're looking at is some sort of weapon involved. And that kind of goes to what you were talking about.
Right. And we got about a little less than 4 minutes left. And in a little less than 4 minutes, let's try and explain asset forfeiture and seizures and the way this is funded, because this isn't coming out of the RCPD budget. This is coming out of tax dollars. This is coming out of seizure funds.
Right. For some time now, both the state and federal governments have had asset seizure programs. And in certain jurisdictions, they kind of get a bad rap. And frankly, there have been some places that have done some bad things with it, like gone after particular pieces of property or gone after someone with a lot of money because they thought they could. We don't do that here. We never have done that here. In fact, when I became the director, there's only $37,000 in that fund, and if left to its own devices to either grow or shrink based on local seizures, it would have grown a little bit, probably over the course of my now almost 11 years, may have gotten to about $80,000 or $100,000. Money goes in, money goes out, you know, that sort of thing. But as I reported, the law board is just under $600,000 right now. That's in large part due to a couple of cases we had here locally that towards the end of the case were adopted by the federal government. one of them was DEA, another one I think the FBI helped us on. And those cases, one occurred before I was actually the director, but the money didn't flow to our seizure fund until after. Those cases resulted in three different deposits into the fund to the tune of $154,000, $283,000, and $180,000.
And were these drug bust cases?
Well, not in the traditional – one of them was, but not in the traditional sense. One of them was a human trafficking thing. That was the early one that was before I was director. One of them was a drug bust, but it was actually a pill mill run by a doctor. And I think a lot of people, if you, again, if you're a newsie, you'll remember this. We had a couple of deaths attributed to that. There were some prescriptions going out for opiates, that painkillers that were being issued when the doctor was out of the country, and the staff were just giving them out like candy. Anyway, the feds finally got onto that after we uncovered it, and they came in late, and a goodly amount of those last two numbers that I gave you were actually from that case. The building was sold off, and he tried to leave the country with some cash, I think, and you know all that was seized. And eventually that amount that I cited was our share of those cases after the feds had finished their handling of the matter. So the long and the short of it is almost all of the money that's in that account, the vast majority of it has come from those two federal cases. It's sort of like a one-time windfall sort of thing. And when you end up with that amount of money sitting there and you ask yourself, okay, I'm going to have one shot to do something that needs to be done with this. What do I do? And this is what we settled on is this Bearcat vehicle. But none of that is tax money. It won't impact local taxpayers at all. It's not part of the PD budget. It, to me, at least on the finance end of it, is kind of a win-win. We get what we need, and the locals don't have to pay for it, and the people who did pay for it in the main were a couple of people with some pretty serious federal violations from whom these seizures were made.
And when do you expect to get this into Manhattan?
Well, I've got the guys working right now on the paperwork end of it. There's a considerable delay on the build time. Frankly, I think it'll probably show up after I'm gone. But we got to get a hold of the company and iron out exactly what they're talking about on the build time yet.
So much we can keep talking about.
Yeah, we could go on, but we're out of time. But I'll be back next month.
There you go. RCPD Director Brad Schoen. Brad, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks to all our guests this morning. Missing today's show will be online on demand a little bit later on newsradiokman.com. Just hit on demand tab, drop down to In Focus. You can catch up on this show yesterday as long as we've been archiving them. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Clark Howard is coming up next on News Radio KMAN. Followed by the Rush Limbaugh Show, Dan Patrick, and The Game this afternoon. We got the Royals beginning at 6:30. We'll keep you up to date on the status of K-State volleyball for the weekend. Got Hurricane Lane implicating that tournament down in Hawaii. I'm Dave Lewis. Thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great weekend. I'll see you back here Monday. Enjoy some sunshine for a change. 8 days from K-State football.
Come in and see your neighbors at Carpet One of Manhattan on Fort Riley Boulevard. They've got you covered. KMAN, Manhattan. This is CBS News on